Talking Automotive for VACC, providing support to the automotive industry with valued information and advice during these tough times.
It's 7 past 10. Good evening from Dennis Walter. If you're just joining us and you're listening through Ace Radio, welcome to you. You can call in any time between now and midnight on 13 13 32, and the same for listeners at 2AY in Albury and also in 2QN in Deniliquin as well in southern New South Wales. Emails to knights at 3RW.com.au and texts 0477 693 693. It's time to talk motoring with Jeff Gwillem from the VACC. Jeff, good evening to you.
Good evening, Dennis.
Jeff, hydrogen cars.
Well, people are attracted to the notion of hydrogen cars, and I remember even when I was growing up, Dennis, people talked about running cars on water. That's
yes.
Sort of how this thing, you know, people sort of understood it. And, you know, actually this is talking about hydrogen cars that emit water. It's the only thing that comes out of the tailpipe on them. And look, I did a bit of work on this today, and I was just astounded to know that they were actually originally created in 1807.
What?
It's unbelievable. 1807. So there was a Frenchman, Francois Isa de Rivol, and he built a sort of a rudimentary car a year or two later. And then, of course, it was just an exercise in science, really, at that stage, around stripping hydrogen out of water and using hydrogen as a power source to generate power in batteries. And but then, of course, you know, we were still using steam then. I mean, we were still on horses, probably. But we went into the steam era. And, you know, the use of petrol in vehicles really didn't come through till around 1870. So, you know, like electric vehicles and hydrogen vehicles, it's sort of all been done before, but when we've done it in the past, Dennis, it hasn't been economically viable because of all sorts of technology and science to do with the way you build electric and hydrogen cars. With electric cars, of course, we've sort of got more comfortable with what we used to call range anxiety, because it doesn't really affect electric cars in the way that it used to, and we know that there's a lot of infrastructure there.
But I do think people would be pretty happy if they could get home at 5:45 on a Friday night and fill the car from the garden hose. That'd be pretty good.
Well, that's where the problem starts, Dennis, because you don't actually put water in the car. You've got to put hydrogen in the car, and to make hydrogen, you've got to use a lot of electricity to strip hydrogen atoms out. You can either get it out of gas or you can get it out of H2O, water, but the amount of electricity and the amount of energy you need to strip that hydrogen out at the moment is still quite high. And there is a number of experiments going on both in Australia and overseas to crack this this gem, which is how do you create cheap hydrogen that's actually locked up in the atmosphere, it's locked up in water, it's locked up in gas, it's all around us. But actually stripping that hydrogen out to get it into what we call a fuel cell, which is where the electronic process and the scientific process takes place inside a hydrogen car. To get it stripped out still costs too much money. However, hydrogen cars will come into Australia. Well, some of them have already been here. The ACT government are going to buy 20 of them. But, you know, it's part of the solution for the future.
It's interesting because I've heard about this over, I reckon, the last 20 years. There's been talk about this intermittently, Jeff, but it's never actually sort of got legs.
Look, Toyota and Hyundai are the two real leaders in this, Dennis. And I remember Toyota and Hyundai drove cars around Australia and tested them, and they actually had a hydrogen refueling unit that went with them to generate the hydrogen as they went. But they can, you know, a modern hydrogen car, the Hyundai Nexo, for example, they can do 800 kilometres. However, you need a lot of infrastructure to squeeze that hydrogen into the tanks of the vehicle under 8,000 kilopascals, which in English means a lot of pressure. And it's got to be cooled at a particularly low temperature to get it into the car. Once it's in there, of course, it's safe. You know, they've got these tanks with these, you know, about, you know, a 1-inch wrapping of fiberglass and Kevlar and that sort of stuff around it. So it's not going to go anywhere in a hurry. But just like the rollout of electric cars, it will suffer the restrictions of infrastructure. It's been overcome in the commercial vehicle area, Dennis, and I think we'll see more of that, because if you're a fleet operator and your vehicles come back every day, then you can actually generate your own hydrogen in your own hydrogen plant and power up those vehicles. And that's happened with buses and light commercial vehicles, and it will happen more. It's quite possible that we'll see more hydrogen commercial vehicles on the road before we do passenger vehicles. But my gut feeling is we'll go diesel, petrol, move into electric over 10, 15 years, and then hydrogen will start to come out the other side. Not that it's not available now, it is, but in terms of being cost-effective and getting the cost of a hydrogen car down, I think that's still some time away. But it's really good signs ahead for the use of gases. But there's no point getting that hydrogen out if we spend as much power getting it out than it is that we save driving a hydrogen car as opposed to a petrol or a diesel or even electric car.
96900693 or 1313132 and 1313132. Any questions for VACC CEO Jeff Quillam? Jeff, I wonder, whenever we talk about sort of electric, or we talk about all the sort of alternate things to what we've become so familiar with, how much pressure is put on from, say, fuel companies, etc., that none of this ever happens?
I hear this a lot, Dennis, and I think there's always theories around buyouts and large corporates buying technology and then put it on the shelf and never using it again. I'm not sure about that in the modern world, because if you take something like stripping hydrogen out of H2O, there's a number of different ways you can do that, and a number of different universities and private sector organisations working on how to do that effectively. So I don't think it's about that. I think it's genuinely around how you get that technology to work properly. My view is that some of the big fuel organisations around the world, they're buying big into renewables. So they know where we're going, and that's why they're buying into renewables as well. But they also know that it's not going to be overnight. And even some of those countries around the world that have made promises around 2030, 2035 about not creating any more petrol or diesel vehicles. My gut feeling is there'll be slippage on that, and that's not to say it's not an aspiration that they want to meet, but my gut feeling is that those petrol and diesel vehicles will be in the vehicle fleet for a long time. But I don't share the view, particularly with hydrogen cars, and there's no secret about how electric cars work. Hydrogen cars are sort of are electric, by the way. They're just generating their own electricity through the reaction of hydrogen and oxygen. But there's no secret in that technology. As I just said, it's been around since 1806. It's how to get that technology done smartly, and how to drag that hydrogen out, those atoms out, so it can compete with other fuels.
Jeff is online. Hi, Jeff.
Well, g'day, Dennis and Jeff. Jeff, you said that some companies now actually have their own hydrogen generator, like a bus company or something. I'm wondering what the size of that, like, is it the size of a refrigerator or the size of a car, or like how viable is it?
They're like a 40-foot truck, and it's actually like a small power plant. That's what it is. And some of the trucking companies have got them. I haven't actually I've seen them, in text, but I haven't stood in front of one of them. But they are viable, particularly if the vehicles come back at night and they refill them every day. I mean, unfortunately, if you drive a truck into the desert and there's nothing out there, you're going to be stuck. But they are viable. If you look on the internet, you can, get consultants in to build these things for you now. So I think that's where the productivity is going to be. Remember, when you've got an electric motor, so with a hydrogen vehicle, you need hydrogen, you need either oxygen or some other method of generating water. You've still got an electric motor, and you've still got a battery, but a much smaller battery than a battery vehicle, because it's not there for storage in the same way, because you're generating your own electricity.
Jeff, thank you very much.
That vehicle will go for a very long time.
Jeff, thank you very much for your call. Jeff Quillam, you've made me think of alternate things. Whatever happened to Ralph Sarich? I know he became extremely wealthy, but the orbital engine.
Yeah, I remember that. And look, Melbourne University had a lot to do with the orbital engine as well. I think that was bought out by one of the big manufacturers. I'm just struggling to think off the top of my head, Dennis, but I think that was a good example of a piece of technology that had particular applications. But I have to say, if a big manufacturer, if a Ford or a Toyota actually thought that that orbital engine was better than the conventional engine that we use, the four-cylinder or six-cylinder, they'd be manufacturing that. But, yeah, I do remember that, and I think Melbourne Uni had a lot to do with that as well, Professor Harry Watson and his team in there. But I don't know where that ended up, Dennis.
Do you remember the Mazda Capella rotary?
Well, there were a number of different rotary motors that came through, and again, stunning for their time, and a lot of people were very attracted to them. But you've got to have engines that you can make over and over again, mass-produce, robust, that can be fixed as well. You've got to have technicians out there that can fix these things. But, they're all great. They're all great technologies, but they're still primarily working on petrol and diesel. So there's a big curve coming up around the renewables and around electric and hydrogen-type technologies.
I wonder where we'll be in 6 or 7 years' time. Jeff Gwillim from the VACC, the CEO of the VACC, thank you, and we'll chat next Monday.
Thanks, Dennis.